I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. In your packets, members, you have the minutes from March 7th. If Representative Fenton wants to move the minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes.
Representative Fenton moves the minutes for March 7th, 2017. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendments are adopted. Members, we have a couple of bills on the docket. We're going to start off with Representative Bliss. Welcome to the committee. And I understand that you honored your freshman responsibilities today.
Yes, Madam Chair, as a token of my appreciation of being heard for the first time in your committee, the requisite treats are on the table.
Well, I'm just going to put on the record, Representative Bliss, it's not just the first time you come to our committee, it's any time you come to our committee. But we do appreciate it.
I'm going to have to approach the Rules Committee. This is going to get expensive.
Welcome. If you want to present, I'm going to move your bill, House File 1438, and if you want to just give us a description. I don't see any amendments. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. To your bill, Representative Bliss.
We are looking to get a little money appropriated to Veterans Journey Home. And Veterans Journey Home is a nonprofit organization that builds houses for our disabled veterans. And I have Trista here that will fill you in a little bit more on the program.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Trista Mattis Castillo, and I am the Development Director of Journey Home, Minnesota. We are a nonprofit organization that serves veterans in affordable housing. So we're serving a sector of our veteran population that are in the 40 to 80% area median income range, so it's affordable housing. And we're setting that housing at a third of their income or less, which meets the requirement for affordable housing. We are directly working with veterans and their families. Our houses are built accessible, they're energy efficient, and they're long-lasting. So we partner with organizations like the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans or other sheltered programs where veterans might have sought other services or even supportive services, and now they're graduating from those programs, and they're ready for long-term stable housing. And so we're building houses to suit those families' needs in communities where there's good schools, and then we're establishing families there for long-term affordability. Our veterans can come into our program in two different ways, so they can do both rental or home ownership. And the rental is set up, again, on a third of their income or less. And their goal is to get everyone on track for home ownership. So this is housing that, you know, is going right back into communities. It's adding to the tax base, and it's stabilizing families long term. And they will rent to us, and we'll work with them to get them set up on credit or whatever they need to do in order to qualify for a mortgage, at which time then they purchase the home for us. On average, our homes are built and are appraising around $300,000, but we're selling them to the veterans at what they're qualifying for at a third of their income or less, which is usually between $125,000 to $150,000. And the reason we're doing that, we're putting on a silent second mortgage for the length of the mortgage that they never have to pay on unless they decide to sell the house and move, because our goal really is to stabilize a family long term and to get all of their other things in line. And then if they decide to sell, because sometimes they get other jobs or they move or that's not the place they want to be, in the first 5 years they're able to sell it directly back to us for exactly what they paid for. And then after 5 years, we know that homeowners are putting equity into their own homes, and so then we do a shared equity. And this really is a way to secure the investment with our other partners and funding partners as well as this appropriation, so that someone doesn't get a home and then try to sell it for a profit and we lose. So it helps in both senses. We currently have 40 homes. We are mostly right now in northern Ramsey County, Anoka County, but we are now moving statewide. We have veterans we're working with in Duluth, in Isanti, Buffalo, Mankato, and Rochester as well, in the same kind of program idea.
Okay. Members, do you have any questions at this time? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, do all veterans qualify for this, or how do you select who of the veterans? Do they need to have any kind of disability or anything? Or?
Miss, and now help me say your name again.
Yes, it's Mattis Castillo.
I'm just going to say Miss.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry.
Fine too.
I bungle names all the time.
It's only Representative Demery.
Madam Chair, I'm not the only one, so.
We'll call you Miss M. How's that?
Perfect. Madam Chair, Representative Johnson. So our veterans are qualified, so they do an application. They have to be a veteran in good standing from their service. And then it is based on income and need. So it is that 40 to 80% AMI. And they have to have an ability to pay. So we're not putting someone into a home that they can't afford. And this isn't a mortgage-free home. There are other programs that have done that with veterans, but long-standing, they don't work as well because we know that people need to have skin in the game. It also honors them, themselves, and their dignity. And so we match veterans based on that. And they don't have to have a disability, though many of our veterans do. And so we build the house to suit whatever that disability might be. And even if they don't currently have a disability, we know with long-term military service as we age that it might come later. So many of our houses, we're building them standard with wider doorways and, you know, roll-in showers and roll-under cabinets so that they're already built because we really are trying to set a long-term sustainability on those houses.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one last question. How do you raise your other funds then for your nonprofit?
Ms. M?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, in the same way all nonprofits raise funds. So we do fundraisers. We have partnered with Teed Up for the Troops, and we're doing a golf fundraiser. We have a gala. We solicit and partner with other organizations. The other thing I should say is the way that we're building our houses are unique, so you gave me an opportunity to remember that I should talk about this, is that so for our houses here in the Twin Cities, they actually have all been built by St. Paul College. So we have partnered with the construction program at St. Paul College prior to their construction class was building birdhouses to learn how to build. And we thought, well, that's ridiculous. And so we worked with them, and we provide the materials, and the students actually come out, and our house is their job site or their classroom. And so they'll build throughout the school year, and at the end, there's a house complete that we can move a veteran family. This is the same model that we're doing across the state. We've also partnered with the trade unions. They're very eager to partner with us, especially in the off-season, so people stay off the bench. And many of those students, actually, from the classroom are getting hired right from the job site on our houses. So it's really a great cycle of life to go through.
Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Sounds like a good initiative.
Okay. Members, any other questions?
And, Madam Chair, I also have one homeowner that's with us that would like to testify. Dan Hansen is a Marine and now living in our house in Shoreview, and so I thought it would be great to hear from Dan.
Yes, welcome, Mr. Hansen. And if anybody else wishes to testify on this bill, if you can come up to the front row just to be ready. Mr. Hansen, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for hearing my testimony. Just tell you a little bit about my story and then how I got linked up with Vets Journey Home. I was one of three brothers in the Marine Corps. Shortly after I joined the Marine Corps, I was deployed to a place called Ramadi, Iraq, a place where we lost 34 men, had several hundred injured, came back, went on another deployment. After I got out of the Marine Corps, my younger brother, who was a Marine, ended up taking his own life. And after that, it took me on a pretty dark road where I tried to self-medicate, made a lot of poor decisions. I eventually turned my life around, but I made a lot of bad decisions up to that point, and one of them was with my credit and things like that. And I have four children, and after getting out of the Marine Corps till I got linked up with Vets Journey Home, I'd been in and out of, you know, rental properties. The last 18 months, I had lived with my four children at my mom's house. And as much as I loved my mom's pancakes, it was a very humbling experience and one that wasn't very conducive to me and my children being able to have a very, you know, functional place to live. And it was very difficult, and it was hard because I had made those choices that affected my credit score, and I wasn't able to get good housing. I wasn't able to find a place for me and my children to live. And then I got linked up with Miss M here at Veterans Journey Home, and it was really a life changer for me. I mean, my children went to me and all of them in one bedroom, to them having their own bedrooms, and for me to, that's such a huge it was such a weight off my shoulders where I was able to focus on all the other things going on in my life. And since I, you know, had changed my life around, I've, you know, been able to do amazing things. I'm working on a doctorate now. That time and energy I wasted, I'm using now to spend time with my kids and to, you know, work in the veterans community and try to do great things. But now that I'm not having to look for housing or going back to my mom's house going, you know, I mean, one day I got to get a girlfriend, right? I can't be bringing her back to my mom's house. So I will say that Veterans Journey Home has really changed my life and my children's life, and has had that ripple effect into the veterans that I work with, and to my family, and to my children. And has been such a huge blessing for me that, I testify every day if that's what it meant to get anything allotted to that great organization. So, Madam Chair, committee members, I appreciate you very much, and thanks for listening to my story.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson. We'll try and get you out of your mom's basement.
Thank you.
Members, any questions for Mr. Hanson at all? Thank you, Mr. Hanson. I do have a couple questions, Ms. Have you had any homes sold so far? It sounds like it's kind of new. You've got the 40 homes in place.
Yeah.
Have you sold any homes so far? And if you have, then do you put veterans into that home, or do you try to sell it on the market, or how does that work?
Yes. Madam Chair, so all of the homes, we've built 40 homes. About half of them are still in the rental status, and they're veterans in. I will mention that Journey Home, we have two sides of the house, so we also serve families fleeing domestic violence. The funding today is specifically for our veterans' homes, but our organization, we do serve two populations. They're kind of the hardest to house, and we're quiet about our domestic violence work just because of we're keeping that privacy for those families. So we're able to kind of celebrate and publicize our work with veterans in a different way. About half of those are in rental status right now. All of our families are on a path to homeownership. And, yes, we recruit directly to veterans, so it doesn't go to the open market. It stays within the organization. And then the other half that have been sold directly to veterans and their families. And so they go out and get a mortgage, a VA-backed loan usually, and they purchase the house from us. So it's a clean sale with the exception of that silent second just to make sure that they stay. And all of our veterans, or all of our families, partner with us long term. So they're giving back. They're saying, "This was so good. How can I help with the next house?" So many of them are volunteering on the other houses, or they're volunteering to work with other members in the community.
And of the homes that you have, then how many are filled with veterans versus domestic violence victims?
Sure. Madam Chair, right now about 30 of them are domestic violence families, and 10 are veteran families. Roughly. We have 15 under construction right now, and those will all be for veterans' families.
And Ms. M., do you do any work then in partnership with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency at all, or how does that, do you have,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, we have not received any funds from Minnesota Housing Finance. We are working with them. Part of the reason we haven't is because most of our houses are built in the suburbs, and the way that their funding has gone up until now has been prioritized around transit, where we're prioritizing schools and jobs for our locations and also partner cities. So we are, we have been working with Minnesota Housing Finance, and they're actually in the 2018 call for proposals. They have reprioritized their point system, but at this time we have not received any funds directly from the Housing Finance Agency.
And are all of your homes new builds, or are some of them remodels?
Madam Chair, they are. It's both. So there's a mixture. The currently under construction of the 15, I would say about half are new construction, and then some are remodels. Many of the lots have been donated to us by either the cities or the counties, so they're tax forfeited properties, sometimes that are meant for tear down and rebuild, or we can rehab. So the city of Roseville we're working on a lot there on the south side of Lake McCarran's. The city of Isanti has called us and said we have 4 lots in the community that we would like veterans. The 3 lots in Badness Heights were also donated by the city.
Okay. Very good. Members, any other questions? Representative Detmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Trista, How do you promote the program, and how do you screen the veterans when they apply?
Ms. M.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, so word of mouth, right? So it's any organization we're sharing, but we have partnered with lots of veterans organizations who are sending us direct referrals for homeowners or for tenants. We actually have a waiting list right now of families that would meet our criteria that we would like to build houses for, and it's a matter of economics. And then we actually have a selection committee, which is made up of our board members and some current tenants and residents in our homes that are on the selection committee that are taking a look at applications. Is this someone that is, you know, going to be a good tenant, represent our community well, and do they have the income requirements to match those houses?
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. Do you have a website that people can go to, too?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, you're very good at prompting me to give all the right information. Yes, we have a website, and it's veteransjourneyhome.org, and it's it has all the information there and contact information and stuff. Okay,
thank you.
And Representative Bliss, have you had contact with the Veterans Affairs Department at all, or have they commented on this bill in previous committees at all?
I don't believe they've commented on this, have they, Chair Detmer?
Representative Detmer,
Would you repeat that, Madam Chair?
Did Ben Johnson come in from Veterans Affairs to comment on this bill at all, or
I don't believe he had, Madam Chair.
All right,
Madam Chair, I can answer that.
Oh, well, thank you, Ms. M. Yes. Okay.
So I have worked closely with Ben and the commissioner. They're very supportive of this bill, and their eagerness was to say, they asked me, could student veterans qualify for the housing? And, of course, they would based on income. Right. And so that was their only concern, is they're really eager because they know the need for veteran housing is to also accommodate the needs of student veterans.
And, Ms. M., is there existing programs that the Veterans Affairs Department handles that does this? Is there any overlap, or is this?
No. This would be, Madam Chair, this would be new. So they do some appropriations to the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, but that's for homeless programs, not in the same, it's, you know, on the continuum. It's more direct services, mm-hmm. and we would be kind of the next level. So when folks graduate or they don't need those extensive programmatic services, they just need affordable housing.
Okay, great. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just maybe a point of information for you. I know I represent the Zabo Veterans Camp in Big Green Lake. Mm-hmm. And I know one summer we brought in a engineer unit mm-hmm. that built many of the handicap accessible cabins. Is there a possibility that an engineer unit could come in and do some prep work for these new homes?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, we will take all volunteers and partners in any shape. So absolutely, we would love to have that.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Mattis Castillo.
Yes, very good.
Close. I'm wondering if there are any communities that have, whether it's a county or a city, that have actually heard about your program, reached out to you with the intent to look for a way to bring, to work collaboratively with you. I would very much like to see a home, at least one, for a veteran in Chanhassen and Carver County. So.
Yeah.
Love a roadmap and yeah. what that would look like.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, actually, outside of Ramsey County, all of the cities we're in are because city members have contacted us or county members have contacted us. In fact, last month we took a trip down to Arizona because the Arizona community heard about our model and said, how can we do this here? So we did some training. There are folks in Florida, Wisconsin, Iowa as well, eager. In Minnesota, the city of Duluth is just donated a large lot that would accommodate up to 6 homes because they heard about our program and said, this is a model that will work. And it also puts, you know, residents back in communities that have vacant lots.
Representative. All right. Representative Bliss, closing comments?
Madam Chair, I'm very honored to carry this bill, and I would appreciate your approval.
Great. Members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1438 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. Thank you, Ms. M. I appreciate it. Representative Bliss, we now have your House File 1527, which I'll move before the committee. Representative Bliss, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is taking some money that is from the Support Our Troops account when you purchase the license plates for your vehicles that say support our troops. The money is given out to veterans in need. And the program's been around quite a while. It's built up a bit of a pile of money that they've figured they can increase the amount of grants given out and still maintain a flush account. So Mr. Kerr is here. He's going to explain a little bit more. And we have another.
Mr. Kerr, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Don Kerr from the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I provided some information on the funding in that account that goes back to its inception, along with a copy of a briefing that I provided in the other chamber regarding the SOT account. And the bottom line is we're bringing this bill forward because working with our partner, the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, we've been able to determine over time that the need for grants and the amount of money required for those grants has been increasing over the last decade. And the initial $2,000 cap that was put in place that we feel very appropriate at the time, we don't think it needs to be there anymore. Sufficient funding is coming into the Support Our Troops account, and sufficient need is being demonstrated by the grants that are coming in. And the way this is working right now, when a grant comes in, once it's vetted, and I'll have Mr. Lyons talk about that process, they're only allowed to reimburse up to the $2,000 cap, and in many cases, the Minnesota Military Family Foundation is providing privately raised funds to make up any difference if the need is greater than the $2,000 cap. And this just seemed like the time to come forward with this bill and make this recommendation to change the cap. There's one other implementing or change that goes on in this thing, and that's the language in the existing law limits the eligibility to persons who are on active service. And the challenge that presents to us is that a service member is at annual training and his water heater blows up, he's eligible for a grant. If he's back from annual training and the Tuesday after his water heater blows up, he still can't afford to get it fixed, but he's no longer eligible for a grant the way the law is written. The way the law was written worked well when we had long deployments. What we're seeing now, though, is the use of the National Guard in a much different way, much more shorter inactive duty training periods and annual training periods that are still quite stressful. We have a large number of soldiers going to Europe for about a month next summer in various increments, and this would really just clarify that language and allow a broader aperture for folks to consider. And with that, I'll stop talking and turn it over to Mr. Lyons.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Tom Lyons. I've been a member of the board of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation for the last 8 years, and I chair the golf tournaments. We've done about 20 golf tournaments in the last 7 years that's raised almost $1 million to cover the difference here that we're talking about today. And I'm also the volunteer host of Minnesota Military Radio, which can be heard on 39 stations all over Minnesota today. We're here today to talk about the MMFF, which is a 501c3 charitable organization. It's been in existence since 2006. We've given out over 1,300 grants totaling almost $3.4 million. And as you look at the numbers here, you'll see that over the first 5 years, the program worked pretty well, subject to the limitations that are on it right now. But in those first 5 years, the Serving Our Troops money covered about $1 million worth of grants. And since then, they've only been eligible for about 600,000 of the grants. Now I want to talk about last year. In 2016, we gave out 151 grants totaling $385,000, and only 60,000 of that was eligible for the Serving Our Troops license plate money due to the limitations that were put on when this started. And of course, when it started, nobody knew how many license plates we were going to sell, and we didn't have any idea how many grants we were going to have to give out.
Mr. Lyons, I'm going to pause you there a second. Can you go over those numbers again? Because I had different numbers for that. Can you go over the numbers again for 2016?
2016, we gave out grants totaling $385,000. And Don and I talked about this on the way over. My understanding is about 60,000 of that was SOT money, and the rest of it was from private donations that we raised as a foundation. And if you take a look at the early years, the SOT money was covering most of the grants, and now the late years it's not. And just to show you the number of grants, even though the deployments are down a little bit, in the last 4 years, they've averaged from a 145 to 155 grant requests that we've approved each year 4 years ago, we gave out about $280,000. 3 years, it was $325,000. 2 years, it was $325,000. And last year, things got complicated, and it was $385,000. What we found, looking at last year's numbers, is that about 25% of those 151 grants were eligible for under $2,000 and therefore covered with the Serving Our Troops money. The next, from 2,000 to 3,000, represented about another 50% of the grants, and then the rest of them were in excess of that amount. So the foundation's in a position where we're running hard to raise as much money as we can so that we can cover the portion that isn't covered by the Serving Our Troops money. And since the Serving Our Troops funds have been generating good income, probably more than we thought they would when this started, and going up each year, now you're accumulating some surplus funds in there, and we're making up the difference. So we're here today to ask to change that limit from 2,000 to 4,000 and to open up the eligibility just a little bit so that we can catch our breaths and make sure that we're still providing these grants to Minnesota military families. Now, those that are eligible are active duty, guard, and reserve, all branches of the service, and they all have a Minnesota connection. So all this money stays right here in Minnesota. We work with the Family Assistance Centers, which is a group of federally funded folks that go out and meet with the families when they put in a grant request. They confirm that the emergency exists. They check on their bank statements to make sure that they're not just looking for some free money. They help them get vendors to fix whatever the problem may be. And in a lot of cases, they're able to get the vendors to put in the labor free, and then they send in a request to us for the balance of the funds. We get the request, our executive director gets the request, sends it out to the board. We usually vote on it within an hour or two. And in the last 8 years I've been on there, we've only turned down two grant requests, and that was because those people refused to get the financial counseling necessary to qualify. We want to make sure when we give out these grants, excuse me, that the problem is solved, that it's not chronic, and that they can get back to work, get on their feet, and get moving. And in a lot of cases in the early years, and even this year, the grants are directly related to the deployments. And as you can imagine, if you're deployed overseas today with our technology, you know immediately if there's a problem back home, and it's a distraction from your mission. Well, here with Family Assistance Centers and the MMFF, we move quickly. We vote on it usually within a day, and we get the money out the next day. It's an efficient program. If they're behind on the rent, we pay the landlord. If there's a vendor in place that's repairing a car or an appliance, we pay them directly. And we make a point of acting on it as fast as we can. And now imagine you're that deployed troop overseas within how helpless you might have felt a couple of days ago. Now within a day or 2 days, the problem is fixed and it's paid for, and you can focus on the mission, get home safely. So that's our mission at the MMFF, and we're just asking that you increase the limit from 2,000 to 4,000, as is laid out in this bill.
Okay. Members' questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Kerr and Mr. Lyons. I think that you helped one of my constituents. A year and a half ago, we had a family that they were deployed. Their well went down, and we worked through some Beyond the Yellow Ribbon folks, and I believe you guys, to get them some help, and they are unbelievably happy. What I would say is please make sure that all of our members know about these things, because I had to go kind of on a little fact-finding mission. And Representative Bliss, I appreciate you doing this. This was the family were so grateful. Both of them were on the phone crying, and it was hard for me to not get choked up too, but it was a big deal. So great work, and thank you for doing this.
Madam Chair, Representative, we make it a point to keep the families anonymous, and even when we're out doing our fundraising, we'd never use a name. And so as a board, it's our rule never to expose any of these military families to any publicity about any of this. And so I don't know quite how I can tell you that we've helped your constituents, but the number of grants we've given out, I think we've covered just about every community. And we've gotten a lot of thank you messages, and we try to do this as fast and as confidentially as possible.
Representative.
And Madam Chair, it was unbelievably fast. So they approached me because they had no other avenues. I turned them over to a friend that Representative Pugh and I both know, and He reached out to you. He's a retired colonel from the artillery, so we have to speak extra loud for him. But, you know, it was great. The family is unbelievably grateful, and again, thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the comment that Mr. Lyons made about troops being able to concentrate on their mission while they're deployed, you know, I was deployed for several months, and that's one of the biggest, being a senior warrant officer, many times these young married soldiers came to me or the chaplain and was concerned about what was going on at home. And I think this is a big issue that a lot of our young troops experience when they're deployed is can things be handled at home? And I think in Minnesota, I think we're doing a good job in reaching out to these families and making sure that when emergencies come up that they're helped. And then Beyond the Yellow Ribbon does a lot, too, with those cases. Just for some information for the people in the committee, there is an amendment here. That's my amendment, but I'm going to be putting that together as a separate bill. So I just want everybody to know that. So.
And maybe Ms. Roberts can help you with this. So I'm looking at the sheet that you gave us that has the Support Our Troops Fund. And when you look at the last page, and it's got the calendar years listed by quarter, the amounts aren't matching with the back page. And I'm just, can you help me rectify that part? Can you?
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee, the reporting is kind of clunky. The numbers that Mr. Lyons expressed are the total grants that MMFF provided, much of that from their own privately raised funding. The amounts in the report that we provide, that is for their disbursement from the previous calendar year. And we don't disperse the money to them as it is needed. We actually front them money, and then they report the outcome of that. So there's a balance that's carried forward to MMFF, and that's how we've done it since the beginning. And so we've continued that. On the durational report that we provided, we originally only looked at this money annually, but we found that difficult because the funding was coming in from the Department of Public Safety on a quarterly basis in some cases. And so we slipped our accounting into every quarter, what we were dispersing and taking in every quarter. So the numbers won't quite match correctly, although they should be pretty close. Well, the actual expenditures will be close, but the expenditure won't match the grants dispersed because MMFF disperses the grants. We give money to MMFF.
Well, Mr. Kerr, in particular, I'm looking at the expenditure side of it. And so I'm looking at the wages, the fringe, and then the miscellaneous. Mm-hmm. And under the wages, you've got $341,000 listed here. And if I'm looking at the last page for, it would be calendar year 16, mm-hmm. What is that, about 90, just a little over 100,000 it looks like. So can you help me out with that?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's other funds that we expend out of the account that aren't related to the grant program. In the report, we also detail that we have hired two licensed alcohol and drug coordinators. And I haven't given the report to this committee yet, but the slides that were provided were presented to the other chamber. And I'd be happy to come back and talk about that in more depth. But there are basically four purposes that we can use the SOT account for: directly providing grants, we never do that; providing grants through MMFF, that's the bulk of the fund; providing veterans services, which is kind of broadly defined, and that's the authority we're using to put those licensed alcohol and drug coordinators on, and I'll talk about that very specifically for a second. We have identified a challenge in that we have some direction from the federal government about how to handle urinalysis failures and individual soldiers that self-refer for alcohol and drug problems. We are directed to refer them for counseling, but there is no funding available to do that from the federal side. The regulations are all written with the assumption that we're all on active duty and an installation, and they pump them into that system. The Adjutant General determined a few years ago that we really needed to put some emphasis on trying to treat these folks and so that we could comply with the federal regulation, and so we made the decision to put on one followed by two licensed alcohol and drug coordinators, and that's where that particular line comes from.
Mr. Kerr, are we jeopardizing then drug treatment for troops by increasing the grant awards from 2,000 to 4,000 as part of this bill then?
Madam Chair, our assessment is no. We don't believe that that is a problem, and we always would be able to curtail the grant program should that become necessary.
And Mr. Kerr, remind me again, when did the Support Our Troops come into place? When did we first start those?
I'm sure I believe it was passed in 2005, and the first funds came in 2006.
Okay, and then do we have the Department of Public Safety, have they, you know, run the numbers based on the number of veterans and potential license plates at all? Have they done any survey so we know revenue-wise?
Madam Chair, on the front end of the program, there were some estimates done by Public Safety and by the Department of Veterans Affairs. What we know is that those numbers were wildly incorrect, but we do feel that we have enough track record now looking backward at what the funding has been. Our initial estimates were that there would be a surge in funding early in the program and that that would taper off. But what the reality is playing out is that it's not tapering off, that Minnesotans are still choosing to buy these license plates and make those contributions to support their troops and their veterans. And as long as we see that continuing to occur, we think that it's appropriate to do this. I will note that we don't think it's appropriate that we're carrying a $1.4 million balance in the fund. That's one reason we're coming here. But we were also very reluctant, particularly early in the program, to try to open up any floodgates and do anything creative because we didn't want to be in a situation where we were running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
We feel this is a prudent step to take at this time, judiciously engaged upon, and we think it's the right thing to do.
No, and I appreciate that, being cautious versus otherwise. Well, maybe we'll need to talk a little bit more about this later, I think. Mr. Lyons, did you want to add anything?
Madam Chair, the two items I'd like to add is, if you can see that last grant request we got was $100,000. We carried over about $40,000 from 2016 to this year, and when we start getting down to running out of the money, then we put in another request to the Department of Military Affairs. And secondly, I failed to mention that in the 501c3, historically our expense ratio inside of the MMFF is less than 1%. We only pay for an annual audit required by the IRS and some postage to send out a track of a donation that we've received so people can deduct it. The board serves for free. We all write checks. It's about the most efficient charitable organization I think I've ever seen. And we go out of our way to make sure that it's run fast, to take care of the Minnesota military families, and clean as it can be. And I thought I should point that out, ma'am.
Mr. Lyons, that's music to my ears. Love to hear it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Members, any other questions at all? All right. Thank you, Representative Bliss. Closing comments. Anybody that wishes to testify on this bill from the audience? Representative Bliss, last remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to bring this bill forward.
With that, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1527 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. Did I get the right number? Hang on. 1527. Okay, very good. Excellent. Okie dokes. Now we have Representative Rosenthal. You weren't supposed to hear that. Welcome, Representative Rosenthal. I'm going to move House File 1563, Representative Rosenthal, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1563 was actually brought to me by a constituent. They could not be here today. They work in the field of mental health.
Representative Rosenthal, can I ask you to speak a little bit
sure.
for me, please?
Sure. There we go.
I've got a cold, so my ears are all clogged up. I apologize.
It's going around.
Yes.
This was brought to me by a constituent who works in the mental health field. My next-door neighbor is a Special Forces member who was deployed 6 times to Iraq and Afghanistan. What this bill does is it's an equine therapy bill for vets with trauma and PS, post-traumatic stress disorder. And it really is a model that's working across the country. There was a documentary film about a suicidal vet called Ride My Way Back, and it was his interaction taking care of this horse for a certain number of hours a day. They really turned the light back on and got him integrated back into society, and that's what we think this bill will do. And so I do have a testifier, and I will turn it over to her.
Thank you. And welcome to the committee, if you can please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jenny Burhau, and I'm the founder of Equine Innovations.
And I just want to say thank you for listening today. I'm really excited to be here. The path that led me here is very authentic and through veterans themselves, and I think that this bill could provide a lot of help to people struggling. Our mission at Equine Innovations is to provide equine assist activities that facilitate physical, emotional, and cognitive growth for individuals with special needs, their families, and care providers. And traditionally, our programs consist of therapeutic and adaptive riding, workshops that for care providers, direct care providers, and family members for people with disabilities. Throughout the last couple years, we kept getting people who had family members that served, and we've had some veterans themselves that have served that come into the program for different reasons. And throughout their experience in the program, they keep coming back to a need for a specific program, especially aimed at needs of veterans coming back to integrate back into society and to create connections with their families again. And Work with Horses does this just beautifully. There's a lot of science behind what actually happens to a person when they are around a horse and working with a horse, and there's a lot of chemical things that happen. And veterans who are struggling with PTSD have a changed brain chemistry. Their neural pathways have changed after a significant trauma. And when they're around a horse, some things happen, resonance happens. Their horses have a bigger electromagnetic field, and they kind of sync people up, and they create the good things in your brain and connectivities that tend to go away when a person is struggling with trauma. So in the moments they spend in the program, whether it's an hour a day, an hour a week, wherever they're doing, they're recreating connections that create stability for them, and we've seen success. So a couple years ago, I connected with about six individuals that have different backgrounds, but all are highly educated professionals in the mental health field and personal growth field, and we discussed how to make this happen. So we've been working very diligently the past couple years in creating a program specifically for veterans and doing it in a way that they would not have to pay for it. So in doing that, the past year has been really specific. We've created an environment, this very specific environment, very specific horses. We have nine horses that are highly trained, safe, good teachers, and in bringing all the people on board, we've gone through many trainings working with licensed therapists in trauma training and what all the different things that can come up in a session. So that brings us to our amount, and we've come up with an amount that I think is very, very feasible. We intend to have between 86 and 105 sessions throughout a year. Each session, we can facilitate 3 to 6 individuals. The number of individuals served is dependent on the individual need. Per our work with the Veterans Administration's polytrauma rehabilitation therapist, Michelle Patterson, she said it's very important to have the ability to build some rapport and relationship. They do not want to be limited to a specific number of sessions. And it's irresponsible for me to sit here and say for $20,000 I'm gonna serve 313 people. What's more responsible is to give you an accurate range. If we're serving 3 to 6 clients per session, and we intend to have 2 days of sessions per week, we're looking at 258 to 516 sessions throughout the year. A realistic range of people we can serve that come back, an average of 2 to 5 times, which we feel is a basic efficacy rate. Some may need more than that, and some may just need one. It's all going to depend on the individual. So we're looking at anywhere from $40 to $77 per individual is what it comes down to. Obviously, if they're one-to-one, we're going to have sessions where it's just that person. They can't deal with a big group of people at that time. So it's one-on-one, and obviously the cost is a little bit higher, more towards that $77. If they can be in a group, sometimes the group is a great thing. They can be surrounded by other veterans, of four or five or six people. Then we have a few more coaching staff and volunteers and a therapist. It's just more people involved with that size group to conduct. So basic down to cost, we've got it really, really narrowed down. Of the 20,000 operating costs in a year, our operation costs are $7,057, and our personnel costs are $12,943, and that's very, very generous on the part of all the people contributing their time. It's just basically to put something back in their pocket from all the travel that they do coming to the farm. Everybody's coming from different areas of the city, and, you know, it may be a 1 or a 2 hour session, but there's 3 to 4 hours involved in that commitment. So that's where we're at for thinking that we have a really feasible program that could do a lot of benefit to quite a few people per year.
Okay. It's Burhal, correct?
Yes.
We've got some questions.
Yep.
Representative Ulum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Burhal, now you, early on in your presentation, you mentioned that this is done elsewhere. Could you talk a little bit about the scope around the country on these types of programs?
Sure. There's many programs. There's, even in Minnesota here, there's not one directly here close to the cities, and that's where we really found a need. There is a really great program south of the cities called Freedom Farms, and I've collaborated with her and learned quite a bit about building a successful program. And they have had a lot of success in that. There's one north of the cities. The name is escaping me at the moment. And they tend to have a niche in veterans who are having chemical dependency issues, more specifically than the PTSD, not so much the mental health area. There's a really, really big program called Braveheart in Illinois. That's very, very big. They're big scope. That's probably the biggest in the country. And then there's a lot of little things throughout the country.
Representative Uglum?
No, Madam Chair, I'm good.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you. Representative Uglum, it's a very good question. I, of course, did the same thing. All you need to do is Google equine therapy for veterans, and you'll come up with lots and lots and lots of states that do this.
Ms. Burhal, can you do us a favor? I was trying to write down all the numbers that you have.
Yep.
If you could email that to us, or if Representative Rosenthal could email that, I'll share it with the rest of the committee as well.
Okay.
But then I also was curious, you mentioned the Freedom Farms, and then you said there was one in northern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Do you know how they're funded at all, or how that, for those farms, how
yep.
they work?
A lot of them are private donations. They get grants. I know there's Susie Berkland at the Freedom Farms that's got private grants. McKnight Foundation, I think, is in Cargill. So some private company donations.
Okay. And is that something that you have pursued then as well, or
not at this point? Oh, we definitely are open to that. We just really want to start with the state, because I think Minnesota is just a fabulous state and does a lot for their veterans, and I would be proud to inform everybody I know that the Minnesota is behind supporting a program like this to support veterans.
And just to make sure I understand, so you currently don't serve anybody, or do you?
We do, just not in a specific program for veterans. They're in, they may be in a therapeutic riding program, or they may be in workshops. We do family workshops, and they come in and, you know, they're having problems connecting again with their spouse or raising their children, and so they come in and they do workshops for family unity, and it comes out that here's another veteran, you know, we could have a specific program. So we do have people in different areas of our nonprofit in programs. We don't have one aligned veterans program at this point. That's what we're gearing up towards.
Okay. And Representative Rosenthal,
Madam Chair, members, because of your great organizational skills and the quick turnaround on this bill, we were going to have a veteran here today, but we could not because of the extremely quick turnaround. We appreciate that.
Sure. Representative Detmer?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And where are some of your horses stable? Are they local stables in the metro area? I know we have quite a few in Washington County, but
it's one farm in Forest Lake, Minnesota, right on the border of Anoka County and Washington County.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, can you join us at the table, please? Ben Johnson. Thank you for coming, Mr. Johnson. I'm just curious. So is this, I assume that the Veterans Affairs is supportive of this, or do you have an opinion on this at all?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ben Johnson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We're supportive of any program that offers mental health support for veterans dealing with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is a challenging affliction, and there's no one-size-fits-all. And we are aware of the VA, that the federal VA hospitals have worked and processed requests for equine therapy, whether it be through a physical therapy program or a recreational therapy program, and the VA hospital does have physicians and support that would maybe be able to collaborate. MDVA itself doesn't have any relationship with any equine therapy programs. We would collaborate with the federal VA and the VA hospital in Minneapolis or St. Cloud for this sort of program.
Is this kind of on your to-do list, though, as looking at it as a therapy option to address this issue within our veterans' needs?
Madam Chair, this isn't an item on our to-do list within the state organization, the state agency. However, we are enthusiastic supporters of any program that benefits veterans and do what we can to collaborate and assist. Mental health services are not something that we provide directly. It is through partnerships with organizations such as this or others that we are most effective at helping veterans in the state.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, if I may just say, in my experience dealing with the VA and going back and forth talking about the possibilities, they've known everything we're about and they're, you know, ready to go. The biggest thing that you know, was stopping them was to know there was a funding stream available. They've gotten into a couple other programs, according to this person, that they get a few things free, and then they wanted to charge, and it just got complicated. And they're very protective of their clients and wanting to know that they have the ability to build a relationship and have an ongoing relationship with an entity like us.
Sure. Okay. Members, any other questions at all? Representative Kunesh Podin, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I just want to let you know that I actually have a sister who does equine therapy. She does it in southern Minnesota. Well, she did do it until she had to leave her farm, but there was a lot of success, and there were times that I was down there helping her with it, working with mostly younger folks, not so much the adults, but it really is incredible to see the progress from somebody who comes in very troubled and struggling to communicate in different ways, and what caring for a horse and getting on the, you know, on the back of a horse and trail riding can do to really help them calm themselves and help them kind of get over some of the issues that they deal with. So thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
Representative Rosenthal, final words.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This bill is just about helping veterans get back into society, and we're asking for $40,000 over the biennium to get started. This is not a program that's in my district, but I think it's extremely important that we get the help out to the veterans that need it.
Thank you. And I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1563 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Howe. Representative Aaron May Quaid. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to move House File 965 into your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My bill is pretty short and sweet. It updates the, or allows the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board to solicit design submissions for a new memorial plaque that will honor our veterans that served at home and abroad during World War One. We updated the definition of what a veteran is in December of 2016. This plaque would reflect those changes. And I have Paul here who can share some more about it.
Welcome, Mr. Mandel. If you want to state your name for the record, yes, and who you represent.
Madam Chair, Paul Mandel, Executive Secretary for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. In earlier testimony over in the other chamber, I heard the story of how many of the veterans never made it abroad to actually be in the theater, but died of the flu that was basically, it was a worldwide pandemic. The current plaque acknowledges those who served, but it doesn't, in the numbers, it doesn't include all those who were in service here and abroad, both. So the existing plaque would be removed and, recycled, and a new plaque would be solicited. My understanding is it's privately fundraised, as all those in the Court of Honor.
Okay. Members, Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. I was just wondering if you had brought any incentives to maybe perhaps ensure passage today, because I believe this is your freshman term and you've not been before committee before, and maybe I was absent that day, but I just, you know, I know that Representative Lilly is a hungry guy at times, and the other night at a committee hearing, he brought bubble tea, even though he's a far more senior member, and I was just wondering if that... because passage is important.
And just to clarify, the rule is anytime you come before a committee. Representative May Quaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nash, I'm very glad you asked that question. I actually sit on another committee with Representative Bliss, and he always brings way too much. You're only hearing one bill tomorrow, and I believe it's yours, and there's no freshman on deck, so I'm bringing your treats tomorrow so that you could spread them out over 2 days.
That's a very good save.
Yes, very true.
All right. Is there anybody from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? Representative May Quaid, any closing comments? Oh, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had the honor of hearing this proposal on veterans, and I had asked Mr. Mandel what happened to the plaque. I was happy to hear that he was saying that he did find out what happens, and he said they are recycled. And I just want to share with this committee the same things I shared with the Veterans Committee. I certainly don't have a problem with recognizing the service members who were a part of the epidemic that was referred to. What I have a problem with is that should be added to and not replacement of the World War One memorial that was put there for a reason and a time in history. And as we continue to find out more contributions that were made, they should be added and it shouldn't be replaced and saying we're now updating history to be this. And that's just a personal preference that I have is add to, not replace.
Very good point. Representative May Quaid or Mr. Mandel, you want to comment to that at all? Or?
I can only add all the plaques down in the Court of Honor are of standard size. There are over 15 of them. There's only about 9 spots left. When we did the one time we did a corrective, well, we've actually done several corrective plaques. In the Court of Honor, we did one for the Bataan Death March when the numbers were found to be inaccurate, and another reference on one of the other memorials. On one of the other plaques, in the Capitol Rotunda, the Spanish American War plaque was found to be incorrect. It made several incorrect references, and the Philippine Study Group came to us back in the 90s, I want to say. And so at that time, rather than replace it, we went back and forth with the committee and several legislative options, and we ended up adding two and made corrections to the existing plaque, and those are both found still in the Court of Honor. However, in the rotunda. In the Court of Honor, though, they are larger plaques. It would be difficult to add another one for the same purpose in another location. It's sort of somewhat chronological. So in this case, I think it would be inclusive rather than replacing it and losing anything that was there in the beginning. I hope that addresses the concern.
Representative, just
thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mandel's testimony today is consistent with his testimony in the Veterans Affairs Committee. I still go on record saying add to, not replace history. Thank you.
Okay. Now, Representative McQuaid, before you give kind of closing comments, I have learned the hard way that memorials have to go to the Rules Committee. And speaking of which, we had a memorial last year, I think it was last year, Mr. Mandel, and it's Representative Petersburg and Senator Vicki Jensen's memorial plaque that they had for the Capitol workers. And we're just curious, where is that going to be placed?
Madam Chair, that's going to be, if you think of the current tunnel as it goes between the two elevators and the front of what is known now as, or commonly referred to as the Toile des Nord ballroom, which is the rotunda space, there is to the right of the door the original stonework, and it's the largest space where all the original stone is still exhibited, and there's a larger, a higher ceiling, and the plaque is intended to go there. We are now in the design. We have had the competition. There were two artists, sixth graders, one who did a free sketch of the dome as a perspective, and the other one whose wording was chosen. So we've combined the two, and that is in progress right now. It'll be done and dedicated at the grand opening during August 11th through 13th.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We got Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could you remind me what you're thinking about doing with this bill?
Representative Johnson, it has to go to rules.
Okay. And from rules, then it can go to the floor?
That's yes. The path? I assume so. I'm not sure, but I assume so, yes.
All right. Great. Thank you.
And Representative McQuaid? Representative Olson?
I just had a... Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Did you say that this would be privately funded? Was that the piece? And then just curious, we heard it today, just explanation, just nothing more than just a learning moment for me of why this path is traveling this way.
Representative McQuaid?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, I really go where the bill tells me to go, but it is privately financed. Plaques cost about $5,000. The cost is pretty stable. $2,000 has already been raised, and so it's no cost to the state. I'm not sure why. Maybe Mr. Mandel can answer that.
Madam Chair, Representative, all the plaques in the Court of Honor are privately fundraised. The legislation always authorizes it, subject to the approval from the CAP Board and usually Veterans Affairs, just for language purposes and making sure everything's accurate, but it is all privately fundraised. All those have been privately fundraised.
And generally, we see all the plaques. So. Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the bill is simple. I just would like to honor all of the veterans from World War I, those that were here and abroad, and I just ask for your support. Thank you.
Great. With that, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 965 be referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative McQuaid. Thank you, Mr. Mandel. Members, we are adjourned.